open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Welcome once again to Talking Twilight Zone. I usually name the players, but tonight I'll pass because we have some different faces. So here's our leader, Bobby Neer. Bob, good evening.
Thank you, Dan. Welcome everyone to this week's edition of Talking Twilight Zone. With me, I'm Bobby Neer. Ken is with me as always, but not Kitty. That's because she's taking a very well-deserved night off and will return in 2 weeks. Although Ken and I are obviously brilliant enough and talented enough to carry this load alone, we decided to give a young, attractive newcomer a break in the business, and so we have Lynn Carpenter subbing for Kitty this week. Lynn is actually well-known here, having called in several times, and she sends in emails each week. Lynn, thanks very much for being here tonight.
Thank you for having me.
One thing about us, we don't just invite people to be here and listen. We actually put them to work, so let's start by having Lynn do what Kitty normally does. Tonight's episode, number 7, titled The Lonely, and starring Jack Warden, brings up all kinds of issues of crime and punishment, and what is excessive and what is not, and what to do about it. Here is Lynn with the specifics. Lynn?
Okay, thank you, Bobby. And before I begin, I just want to say a special thank you to Bobby, Ken, and Kitty for inviting me to co-host the show in Kitty's absence. I was very flattered by the invitation. I'm thrilled to be a part of the show. Thanks so much. The Lonely is a story about a man named James Corey, played by Jack Warden, who has been sentenced to live out the next 50 years of his life in solitary confinement on what Rod Serling describes in his opening narration as a dungeon. But that dungeon is really an asteroid. He's serving his time for the crime of murder, which Corey swears he committed in self-defense. He has no other form of life around him, but every 3 months a rocket ship arrives carrying whatever he needs to survive on this asteroid. However, as Rod Serling also mentioned in his narration, James Corey is dying of loneliness. He's supplied with books, games, music, parts to rebuild an old automobile, anything to occupy his lonely existence. But the one thing he needs most is companionship. He keeps a daily journal, but his days don't change much from one to the next. Corey anxiously awaits the arrival of the supply ship every 3 months because it means the company of other humans for a period of time. However, during the ship's most recent visit, they could only stay for 15 minutes, and Corey is beside himself. Now, there are 3 astronauts aboard the ship, and the captain is a man named Allenby, who seems to believe in Corey's innocence and takes pity on him by sneaking a gift for Corey onto the ship. Even the other astronauts don't know what's in this large crate. But inside the crate is a robotic woman named Alicia, played by Jean Marsh. Now, the robot seems to have all or almost all of the traits, emotions, and thoughts of a real-life woman. She speaks and she has a memory. Corey doesn't accept Alicia at first, but when he sees she has feelings, he soon falls in love with her. They spend almost every moment together, gazing at stars, talking, playing board games. Of course, one thing they probably couldn't have was a sexual relationship. Nevertheless, a year or two later, the ship returns earlier than scheduled, and Allenby rushes ecstatically to Corey and tells him that he's been pardoned, he's a free man, and he's going back to Earth with them. Well, Corey's thrilled, but Allenby tells him that because they are bringing back men from other asteroids as well, he can only bring 15 pounds of possessions, and Alicia can't go with them. Well, Corey won't accept leaving her behind because she's a real woman to him now. So Allenby is forced to shoot Alicia when Corey runs after her. He shoots her in the face, exposing much of her wiring. Anyway, that's when Corey is jolted to reality as he listens to a faceless Alicia repeating his name over and over and over again until her voice fades out. Allenby then tells Corey that he's leaving behind is loneliness. Corey agrees and says he must remember that, and then they leave to go back to Earth. Now, I actually liked this episode very much and gave it a classic rating of 5. I thought the interaction between the Corey and Alicia characters was great. As I said, I don't think they could have had a sexual relationship, so I don't know how Corey planned to deal with that over time, or even in the event that he could bring her back to Earth with him. I'm not saying the story doesn't have a few flaws and unanswered questions. I agree with Bob in his review that it might have made a great hour-long episode. But I think Rod Serling's whole intent with this episode was to make us feel something, some compassion for Corey. And if we saw him murder someone, the audience may have felt less or nothing for him. And Rod wanted us to feel some emotion for him. And Ken totally made my day and gave me one of the best laughs I've had in a while when he commented in his review that he felt Agnes Moorhead, whom I believe was about 25 or 30 years older than Jack Warden at the time, would have been a better choice for the Alicia character. Sorry, Ken. You're great, and I know you love this episode, too, but I think if Corey had opened that crate and saw Andorra curled up at the bottom, he would have sealed that crate back up good and fast while wishing that Allenby had just brought him a puppy dog. Maybe Elizabeth Montgomery would have worked. But anyway, I really enjoyed the storyline and thought it was very well cast and very well acted. So, Ken, Agnes Moorhead aside, let's hear your thoughts on The Lonely, because I know you liked it, too. Over to you.
Okay, Lynn, good job. Yes, the story did work for me. I know Bob is he's in the background waiting to get both of us.
I know.
So when Bob comes on, everybody, I'm just giving you a warning. But as for me, the story worked. And I agree, Rod Serling had a point in the story, and that is to get everybody caring about these characters. And me, watching on my sofa, viewing the episode for the first time, I cared about the character, you know, this Corey guy, stranded on an asteroid, and the, you know, the setting that they set up, he's in the lonely asteroid, and there's nothing around but just his shack, and he's got a car outside, and you just feel for the guy right away. Who wouldn't feel for him? And he's 9 million miles away from Earth. I caught that in the opening narration. Just think, 9 million miles. And I made the point in my review. If you're 9 million miles away from something, in order to travel there, you need, if you went 1,000 miles an hour for 24 hours, that's 24,000 miles you would travel on a spaceship. So if you figure it out, it would take you 3 months to reach the asteroid. So pretty extreme there, but Serling did the job. He got me interested in this guy, and then when the robot, the female robot, comes out of the crate, Jean Marsh, Alicia, you care about her, too. And so these two kind of, they play checkers, and then she cries a little bit. And then you're just feeling along with these characters. And then the end scene was a shock. Rod Serling went for the shock and awe in this story. Because
I agree.
In the first six episodes, kind of flat. If you study every single ending of the first six episodes, especially the La-La girl who has the projector, Ida Lupina, she just goes into La-La Land. That was a terrible ending. And the other ending, Mr. Denton, you know, walks away in the desert.
Oh, that was awful.
But this ending, what happens? Allenby says, nope, can't take Alicia. And you're right with Jack Warden, the Corey guy. You're right. You feel the same thing. Oh, I want to take Alicia. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, takes his gun and shoots her in the face. And you're just stunned. And she's just there with the robotic face, you know. And then the eerie ending. And, you know, for this reason, I gave it a 5 classic rating. There are some flaws. There are some unanswered questions. And the storyline is a little, you know. And I suggested Agnes Moorhead because I did not think that Alicia and Corey were a couple. Now, I know Jack Warden is 39 years old and Jean Marsh is 26, so 13-year difference.
But Agnes Moorhead was 66, I think.
I know. But Jack Warden in this episode, he looks like he's 55. And Jean Marsh, she looks like she's 18. And they're just not a couple. But anyway, that's why I suggested Agnes Moorhead. Actually, the way to punish this guy is to give him the Wicked Witch of the West.
And Dora.
Of Oz. But I know Bob is seething at the teeth, so go ahead, Bob. I'll throw it over to you.
Well, poor Corey. My rear end is bleeding all over the place because he's in such bad shape. All he's got, as Lynn just enumerated for us, is everything he could possibly need to keep him amused. He's only been accused of murder. I don't care that he says it's self-defense. Every prisoner says that. And he's all alone on this asteroid. Apparently, he's so dangerous, he has to be kept off the planet. And he has absolutely, he has everything he wants. He gets to do everything normal prisoners on Earth don't get to do, but he doesn't have anybody to talk to during the day. And I'm supposed to feel really, really sorry for that. Well, here's the problem with this. First of all, I don't mind the episode at all. I think it's well done. It certainly is imaginative and innovative, that's for sure. It does have everything a Twilight Zone episode needs to have. I gave it 3. I'm not about to give it a 4 over 5 because there's just too much missing. For one thing, if you want me to really feel sorry for Corey, you got to give me something. You got to tell me what he did. You don't have to go into great details. I don't need to have the whole story. But don't just tell me nothing. I mean, why is he there? Why, if I told you anything about any prisoner on Earth anywhere, the first question you would ask of me is, well, what did he do? Did he kill somebody? Did he rob a bank? Do you have too many parking tickets? What is it? I don't know. So it's hard to feel sorry for somebody before you get the entire story. And I don't ever get the entire story here. I don't ever get it all. I never really find out. Beyond that, when we get to the second half of this program, I want to get off the episode and into Crime and Punishment and what it's all about and what we try to do when people do things wrong. I mean, Corey has been sent to an asteroid. That apparently, whatever time in the future this is supposed to be, is how it's being done. He's been sent away, and he has everything around him except that. If you commit a crime and you're put in prison for, I don't care if it's for a month or a year or for life, one of the things that you're going to miss is female companionship if you're a man. That's one of the things denied to you, and that's why we don't have co-ed prisons. That's one of the things you'll lose right off the top. That's the end of that. Whether it's sex or just companionship or having somebody around, that's the first thing that gets taken away from you. That's the first thing you're going to notice, especially if you get put in solitary confinement. So Corey is gets that taken away from him, and I don't feel sorry for him at all. As a matter of fact, I think Corey has it much better than any prisoner on Earth has it. He's allowed to go outside. They even bring him a car to put together. I'll bet that there are prisoners all over the country right now tonight as we're speaking who would love to have a model car to put together, much less an actual car to put together. It simply is the kind of thing nobody ever gets. So right away, I really don't feel all that sorry for him. It's impossible to do that.
Well, now, female prisoners would go through the same thing. I mean, a female prisoner would miss male companionship.
Absolutely, and that's one of the things. That's what can you do? If you have children and they do something wrong, what do? You tell them they can't go out with their friends, or you can't have dinner tonight, or something that they will miss. I mean,
take away their TV, yeah.
That's what it's all about. So right away, I'm supposed to feel sorry for him. It's too extreme. It's too extreme. No, it's not extreme at all. For one thing, it isn't any different than what you would be doing right here. I don't care whether somebody takes and puts you in a cell, or they put you on a planet. If you're alone, you're alone. And there are people in cells tonight who will feel just as lonely as Corey did in that episode. So I'm not buying into any of that. Now, one of the things that always bothers me about the Twilight Zone is that Serling, as good as he was, his reach always exceeds his grasp. He's always looking for something, but he never quite gets it because he's got a 30-minute story. Take out the commercials, he's got 25 minutes. He doesn't have the time to get into the kind of details that a story like this deserves. If ever there was a story on Twilight Zone that should have been an hour long, this is the one, because there are all kinds of things missing. He sends her this robot, and then they fall in love immediately. Well, it doesn't take any time at all. Well, she's going to fall in love with him because she's programmed to do it. But first Corey is repelled by her and then says it's disgusting. And then, it's about 2 minutes later, and already he's reaching out for it. It's wonderful. Why did they have to send him? What was the purpose of sending him a woman? They could have sent him anybody. They could have sent him a guy just to be a pal with him. I mean, you see nothing but men in prison.
Or a dog.
I was just going to say that. Or send him a pet. Send him a dog. A dog will sit there with you and sit and look under the stars.
Or see on the face.
He'll sit with his head in your lap forever. He'll follow you everywhere. And he'll stay there until the both of you die. You can bet on that.
Well, folks, we'll come back with more Talking Twilight Zone right after this on ShareVision Radio.
Hi, everyone. I'm Susan McCrae, host of Getting to Know You. You're listening to The Vocal Majority, a wonderful chorus that is under the direction of my next guest, Jim Clancy. He has been with The Vocal Majority since its inception 35 years ago. They're great. Their harmonies are perfect. Jim Clancy has built an international reputation as an arranger and vocalist. He's conducted the Vocal Majority in performances throughout the United States, Canada, Scotland, England, before two United States presidents, at national athletic events, with major symphony orchestras, and before hundreds of national conventions. The Vocal Majority has recorded 22 albums, and under the direction of Jim Clancy, they've won a record 11 International Chorus Championships. Please join me Tuesday when Jim Clancy is my guest on Getting to Know You, 6:30 p.m. Pacific, 9:30 p.m. Eastern, right here on KSAV.org. ShareVision Radio.
Back we go to more Talking Twilight Zone, Bob.
Thanks, Dan. Not long from now, on October 2nd to be specific, the Twilight Zone will celebrate its 50th anniversary since the day it began on TV. After 5 decades, it is still remembered as if it just started last week. Not every TV program can say that. In order to be in the realm of people like Lucy and Ricky, Seinfeld and Rod Serling, you need to be very good most of the time. The Twilight Zone is memorable the vast majority of its 5-year run, but even so, every now and then an episode comes along that resonates like no other. In the first season, just 8 episodes into what will turn out to be 156, the series presents what some people feel may be the very best episode of the entire series. Personally, I think there are 3 of them, but this is clearly the first. A bookish and henpecked little man who desires nothing more than to be left alone with the printed word, a world gone mad, bent on self-destruction, and a single pair of all-too-breakable eyeglasses all come together to create one of the single most memorable episodes ever to appear, not just on The Twilight Zone, but on TV. Burgess Meredith stars in Time Enough at Last, 2 weeks from tonight, on Talking Twilight Zone. Before we move on, Lynn has 2 emails to read from 2 familiar names. Lynn?
Okay, this email is from Helen Weathers, our good friend from England, who has sent emails to the show in the past and is a regular contributor to the discussion group. Helen writes, "The Lonely is one of the few Twilight Zone episodes in which I have recognized any of the cast. Jack Warden from The Fugitive and Jean Marsh, co-creator, actress, and icon of the 70s TV series Upstairs, Downstairs. Instead of playing a human servant, however, in The Twilight Zone, she plays a robot who becomes very much an equal to her master. It even looks like they will live happily ever after until fate intervenes." And then Helen wishes me luck on my first time co-hosting. Thank you, Helen. Your emails are always appreciated, and also thanks for your good luck wishes. Our next email is from our own Kitty. Hey, Kitty. Hope you're having a great time, and I hope I do you proud tonight. Kitty writes, "Overall, I enjoyed this episode. I gave it a 3 rating. It didn't knock my socks off or anything, but I found it enjoyable. I enjoyed the actors in the roles of Corey and Alicia. I would have liked to have known a little more of the details of how Corey ended up there. Corey claimed that he killed a guy in self-defense, which to me implies there was some kind of a fight involved before the actual death occurred. It seems odd that if those were the circumstances, that Corey would have been found guilty of first-degree murder when that might have been more of a manslaughter charge. As for putting someone on an asteroid, I think it's a good idea. I think it would be an especially good idea for the sex predators of the world. You don't even have to give them separate asteroids. Put them all on the same asteroid and let them all duke it out for survival. I think in this day and age, prison has become too nice of a place. Call me crazy, but it seems that when we started making prison a nice place to be, we started having more criminals. Giving criminals gyms to work out in and 3 hot meals a day is too nice. I brown bag it to work. If I can be content with a sandwich for lunch, then so should the criminals in prison. Thanks, Kitty. Great points and great to hear from you.
All right. Well, she does make some very good points. And like I said earlier, I want to kind of get away from this episode because it's very straightforward. We pretty much can predict what's going to happen. No, you can't predict that she's going to get shot in the face at the end, but you can pretty much, if you're paying attention, see that something is up here and he's going to have to make a decision on whether or not he's going to be able to stay with her or not. So I don't know that I was all that shocked at where it went.
Well, he fell in love with her face first. That was the first thing I think he fell in love with.
But the thing is, you know, let me say this. It's 2009, and it's very ironic that this episode should come up because in just a month or so, if indeed it isn't here already, is the 40th anniversary of Charles Manson being in prison in solitary confinement.
Mm-hmm.
He's been there since 1969, and he's been in prison before that. He's been on TV this week. A couple of shows have marked that the anniversary is coming up. He's an old man now. I believe he's in his 70s at least. And that's fine with me. I always thought that he should have been executed the way he was supposed to be until that the Supreme Court debacle came up. And it's okay with me that he continues to live. I'd like to see him live about another 25 years. And when he's 100 years old, then he can go to hell because it'll still be there. And they'll still be waiting for him. That's just fine. He's been in solitary confinement. He's not allowed anything at all. I went on the internet earlier today and looked around, and he's not having a good time, and I'm not suggesting that he should. But somebody's going to have to tell me that that isn't as bad as an experience as Corey being on that asteroid. 40 years. Ken, tell me. I sentence you to 40 years in one single cell. No TV, no radio, no internet, no nothing. 40 years, and you're feeling sorry for Corey? Give me a break.
Well, I made the point. I didn't really feel sorry for what he was going through, but I got engaged in his character and his development and his plight. So that was one of my main points. I think your point about Manson is a good one. I was thinking of another one. If you ever seen the movie Papillon with Steve McQueen, remember that cell he was in with the cockroach and the darkness?
Right.
Oh, that would be absolutely
that was bad.
But,
see, I think at least Corey gets to roam around.
Yeah.
And I bet that if I showed that episode to prisoners right now in prison, they would look at it and go, what the hell? I mean, I only wish I had the opportunity to do what he's doing. I have to sit here all day. You know, if you're part of the general population, you get to eat with them, you get to go out in the yard a while. But if you're in solitary confinement, and a lot of prisoners are because they're just dangerous, you are going nowhere. And you know what? The Lonely also points out another thing that always strikes me whenever I'm watching a prison movie or anything like that, and that is that the guards are just as much prisoners as the prisoners are. And it's certainly in the story, in the Twilight Zone story, the part played by Ted Knight certainly indicates he hasn't seen his wife, he hasn't seen his kids, he's sick and tired of taking so many months to get there to bring him supplies. And, you know...
Oh, but he was obnoxious.
It's just as bad. I'll tell you right now, not only do I not want to be a prisoner, but I don't want to be a guard either. I mean, I don't want to spend my life walking up and down, looking in cells to make sure these guys are sitting there. That just sounds absolutely horrible to me. Now, of course, you don't have to take that job. You can't get some other job. Nobody's forcing you to do it. But still, I think the thing about this episode, it makes it look like the very thing that Sterling wanted to make it look like is the very thing it doesn't look like. From the minute it starts, I'm thinking to myself, all right, I think he wants you to feel sorry for him because they go out of their way. Sterling conveniently leaves out what he did. If I was writing the story, I would say, well, how do I get the audience on my side? Most of us are hard law and order people. We don't like criminals. We're afraid of them. And as far as I'm concerned, I believe in the death penalty. I can tell you that Kitty does, too. And I have
so
no problem.
So do I.
Have no problem with life sentences. You can lock them away forever, and I don't want to hear about it. That's okay. However, I mean, I just think in this case, it's a stacked deck. Sterling played fast and loose here by thinking to himself, well, I can't tell the truth because I run the risk of people like Bob saying, I don't care, so he's alone. Big deal. You're breaking my heart. I don't really care one way or the other. And that's the problem I have with it. There are a lot of other issues in here, too. I know Ken likes science fiction. Ken, aren't you amazed that they found an asteroid that has oxygen on it? Why do they need to bring him supplies? You know what? If there's air to breathe, if they can go to an asteroid and breathe regular air, then there must be water there, and if there's water there, there must be life there.
I was wondering why they didn't have suits on either.
Yeah.
I don't think he was really alone because they found something remarkable, an asteroid where human life can survive. And you know what? And how are they affording it? Ken knows this better than anybody. In California, what are they doing? Aren't they letting like 4,000 or 40,000 or something nonviolent prisoners get out early?
Because I want to ask both of you a question. What do you think is worse punishment, being in the heat, you know, like the Mojave Desert, which this episode looks like, or being in Siberia, where you have the frozen tundra, like, let's say, Antarctica, or really, really cold? What do you think?
Well, both are horrible. I don't like weather extremes.
What would you take? Lynn, which one would you take, the heat or the cold?
I'd take the heat.
But Corey doesn't look uncomfortable in any way. He doesn't look uncomfortable at all.
I take the heat because you can walk around naked if you want to.
tell me something, both of you. Tell me, how do we afford to do this in the future? We're putting prisoners on asteroids. Because, like I said, in California, they're letting nonviolent prisoners out early because the state is bankrupt and Arnold's out of money. And so they're letting them out early to cut back on the cost of the prisons in California.
Well, they can just let them out in San Francisco and let them roam around with the homeless, you know, over there.
Well, that's just great. Well, that's a fabulous idea. So now, sometime in the future, we're actually going to be able to afford to put a single prisoner, one single prisoner on an asteroid and send a group of men out to bring him supplies.
Yeah.
That's going to cost a fortune.
But Bob,
I mean, I can't imagine such insanity.
Bob, this episode works, though, because if you've seen it in 1959 and then you went to the office the next day, you're going to talk about it.
Absolutely.
I'm not saying I wouldn't. I'm just saying it's illogical, and I just don't like to be manipulated like this. That's all I'm saying, and there's a lot of Twilight Zone episodes that are like this, where they tell you just enough. They tell you what they want to tell you because it's all about twist endings and surprises, and the only way we can really get to that kind of surprise is to not exactly tell us everything.
But did you notice how Rod Serling made sure that he kind of like threw it in our faces, how Allenby really believed in Corey's innocence? He didn't come right out and say it, but you could tell
that's a separate issue, Lynn.
It's almost like trying even more to make you feel
something.
I know
that, but the issue in the story is about crime and punishment and whether the punishment is cruel and unusual.
Always fit the crime. It's like we didn't know the crime.
If you want to talk about Corey and whether or not he got a fair trial, that's another episode. That's another story because he says it was self-defense. That's another story. If that's true, then he's the last man in the world that deserves to be on an asteroid. I mean, I don't need him to be put on an asteroid.
The punishment should definitely fit the crime, but we didn't know exactly what the crime was.
Oh, thank you. That's my whole point.
Yeah, so Rod tried to make us feel something for him by not telling us.
Exactly. Yeah.
The key also is this. Both of you watch this episode again?
I've watched it three times in the past 3 days.
I'll watch it again.
I've watched it plenty of times.
Well, I have no problem with the episode at all, but I'm just saying I do require just a few things. There's a lot of suspension of disbelief you got to have with the Twilight Zone, or you'll never be able to sit through the series.
And that's all the time we have for Talking Twilight Zone for this week. Join us again in 2 weeks on ShareaVision Radio.